The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on May 19, 1987 in Sweden. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 26, Texts 41 through 43.
Matrat Vikurvarat Tejaso Deva Choditat Rasa Matram Abhut Tasmat Ambo Jiva Rasa Graha. Translation. By the interaction of fire and the visual sensation, the subtle element taste evolves under a superior arrangement. From taste, water is produced, and the tongue which perceives taste is also manifested. Purport. The tongue is described here as the instrument for acquiring knowledge of taste. Because taste is a product of water, there is always saliva on the tongue. End of the purport and translation of text 41. Text 42. Kashayo madhurastikta katvamla iti naikadha bhautikana vikarena rasa eko vividyate. Translation. Although originally one, taste becomes manifold as astringent, sweet, bitter, pungent, sour, and salty due to contact with other substances. Kledanam pindanam tripti prananapyayanondanam tapapanodabhuyastvam ambhaso vitayastvima. Text 43. The characteristics of water are exhibited by its moistening other substances, coagulating various mixtures, causing satisfaction, maintaining life, softening things, driving away heat, incessantly supplying itself to reservoirs of water, and refreshing by slaking thirst. Purport. Starvation can be mitigated by drinking water. It is sometimes found that if a person who has taken a vow to fast takes a little water at intervals, the exhaustion of fasting is at once mitigated. In the Vedas it is also stated, Apo maya prana. Life depends on water. With water, anything can be moistened or dampened. Flour dough can be prepared with a mixture of water. Mud is made by mixing earth with water. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, water is the cementing ingredient of different material elements. If we build a house, water is actually the constituent in making the bricks. Fire, water, and air are the exchanging elements for the entire material manifestation. But water is most prominent. Also, excessive heat can be reduced simply by pouring water on the heated field. Thus ended Bhaktivedanta Swami. Translation and purports of text 41, 42, and 43, and the 3rd canto, chapter 26, entitled fundamental principles of material nature, the Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam. They taste and its related aspects are being discussed. And from the subtle taste, water, the tongue, which perceives taste, and all other connected aspects are created. In the manifestation of this universe, we find that things manifest from the subtle to the gross. Originally, things are lying dormant in the body of Vishnu. Gradually, through the process of creation, these various manifestations of the material world become exhibited. Modern scientists is trying to create life going from the gross to the subtle. Taking gross building blocks, they're trying to organize them in such a way that symptoms of life will be manifested. Little do they know that actually things come from the subtle to the gross, from the more fine to the more. So, originally there is Krishna, who is smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. He expands his individual parts. Both Krishna and individual parts are eternal. They are not created. Individual soul as such is not created. It's an expansion of Krishna. The gross material, the vast expanse of material energy known as the Mahat Tattva or the Pradhan is gradually formed into various aspects of the material creation. Through the processes explained briefly in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But actually, the Lord Brahma is able to manifest these different aspects of material life to create the planets and living entities. It's not something that is that anybody can do. He has got specific intelligence for this purpose. He also has four heads in this universe, more heads in other universes. Apart from that, his consciousness is far greater than anyone could conceive. Snow be able to have, he's conscious of the whole universe, what's going on. This power to be able to do that is given by Krishna. He's therefore considered guna avatar of the mode of rajas, empowered for the purpose of creation. This is the illustration. Once there was one great yogi who was a great admirer of Lord Brahma. This yogi was obsessed with worshipping Lord Brahma. So he was doing some tapasya, and he satisfied one great rishi, either Vishista or, I forget, there was one, I think it might have been Vishista Muni, and there was a equally similar advanced rishi. He requested that if he could become a Brahma, even just for a moment, it's not possible for you to become a Brahma, that's beyond my power. Or if I could just, for a moment, be able to see, to know what it's like to be a Brahma. Just to have, to be able to just understand things from his point of view. To have his consciousness for just a moment. So that rishi said, this is very dangerous. How can a normal living entity have the consciousness of Brahma, even for a second? No, but just for a second, you can do it. You're a great rishi, you have the mystic power, you can do anything, practically speaking. And I just want to know, I'm just so interested. I mean, imagine he's creating everything. The whole universe is just there inside his car. What it would be like to just see things even for a second, the way Lord Brahma sees them. It's like he was just completely absorbed with this thought. You know, it's, wow, Lord Brahma is creating this whole universe. And just like, right? I mean, we show Golden Gate Bridge is going to its 50th anniversary. The newspapers are saying it. Here, people are really proud whenever we invent a new submarine or a new nuclear bomb or a new jet. Lord Brahma is creating the entire universe and creating the human beings that are having the intelligence to create these things. Compared to, just like a computer is supposed to have, the biggest computer right now on the planet has about 100 billion bytes of, memory capacity. Where the human brain is supposed to have something like 100 or 1,000 trillion. By their estimate, but they haven't really been able to put the limit, but at least 100 trillion, which is so many times more than the biggest computer. So these are all created by Lord Brahma. So this yogi was just begging that rishi just for a moment, if I could just see things from the point of view of Lord Brahma. So finally the rishi said, all right, at your own risk, I take no responsibility. So no, I take full responsibility. Just for one moment. So the rishi said the mantras to give this blessing, touching water. And he said, now you be blessed, you know, with the consciousness of Brahma for one moment. They gave that blessing. Then yogi's brain was just smashed into a million pieces and he's just splattered all over. It's finished. Having Brahma's consciousness in his little brain, human brain, it was completely overloaded. So then, of course, he took birth on the planet of Lord Brahma because he died completely Brahma conscious. So the point is that how are we going to actually understand exactly how the material creation is going on? It's not 100% possible. What percent possible? Some percent is possible. Therefore, whatever percent is possible, that's being explained to us. But just like it says, by interaction of fire and sensual sensation, the subtle element taste evolves under a superior arrangement. Now, how fire and visual sensation is interacted to produce taste, is definitely beyond our understanding. But by their superior arrangement, they are able to somehow combine these two things, fire and visual sensation, and create taste. Like this, there's a lot of tricks, a lot of secrets, a lot of mysteries that Lord Brahma knows. We don't know. What is a mystery? That means something you don't know. That's a mystery. So there are something by superior intelligence they can know, but we don't know. Brahma is more intelligent even than Indra and all the demigods. He knows more than they do. Therefore, they go to him for advice sometimes. A lot of the time. What to do? Now we're in a fix. Similarly, the other lower demigods, they know less than Lord Indra. Indra knows more than they do. That's why he's king of the demigods. So in this way, things are coming from the subtle state to the gross. But even Lord Brahma, who's the most intelligent, you can say, in terms of creation, in this universe, but compared to even other bigger universes, or compared to Vishnu, he may be compared to Vishnu, he's totally insignificant. Whatever he's getting from Vishnu. So this is the First point of intelligence is to understand where does our power come from. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, where do you get your power? How can you defy me? And Prahlad said, I'm getting my power from the same place you're getting your power. Everyone is getting their power from the same source. This is the thing that someone who's intelligent will understand. That where is the power coming from? What is the difference between a rock and a person? Why is it that a rock cannot speak but a person does? What gives that power of speech, the power of consciousness? If we understand that these qualities are actually coming from the Supreme Conscious, Chaitanas, Chaitananam, Nityas, Nityanam, Ako Bahunam, Idhatu Kaman, then we are actually understanding the real essence of everything. The Lord Chaitanya said his Sankirtan movement was for those who are more intelligent. And those who are intelligent, they'll join. Sometimes we think intelligence means education. Someone may be uneducated but be very intelligent. If he accepts Krishna conscious movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that person is very intelligent. Because where else will you get such an opportunity? Such a bargain. Mentioned before how when Jagai Madai, when they were delivered by Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, they were guilty of so many offenses. They were so sinful, so offensive. They were born in a Brahmin family, so they knew about the Vedic laws of karma. I mean, they knew the Vedas, they knew what were the laws of karma, how they worked. From the code of Manu, they could understand what were the different karmic reactions were different. So then their special hobby was to look up in the code of Manu to see, now what's the next offense we can do? What's the worst sin we could possibly do today? Okay, here, to rape the wife of the elders. Alright, there's a good one then. Okay, here's one. To murder a Brahmin. Oh, fantastic. Let's do that one today. And then they were just like purposely doing every heinous type of activity. Now, the ordinary ones they weren't too in. Those were like just bread and butter. They really wanted to do, you know, top sinful activity. They're so demoniac they had become. When they surrendered to Nitai and Gaur, as I mentioned, that time, Lord Chaitanya said, well, I can forgive you if you promise that you'll never commit these offenses again. So they promised, had them go to the Ganges, take their bath, come back, and gave them initiation. Madhai and Madhava Das Brahmachari. This way, the reaction in Jamalok was they were just astonished because Chitragupta, the head clerk of the accountant general for Jamaraj, she had been keeping the whole account. They're preparing a special course of treatment for Jagai Madai. Then at one time, Lord Chaitanya just cleaned the slate. They were immediately forgiven. So there was the talk of the place that how Lord Chaitanya, these were the most sinful people. I mean, they had so much karma accumulated, cleaned off. When Yamaraj came, he was out for some. When he came back, at that time, they came up to him. Jamaraj, did you know what happened? What happened? Jagai Madai. They surrendered to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of their karma was cleaned off. And how much karma did they have? So they started to explain, they had so much karma that if we were to put it into writing, it'd take up warehouses, room after room. Explaining just a few highlights. Jamaraj was listening. Suddenly, boom, he fell unconscious. He said, oh no, what have we done? We've given Jamaraj a shock of his life. He fainted, he couldn't take it. So much karma was just too much of a shock for him. So they all came there and started fanning him and everything, but nothing. They put a little water on his head. He wouldn't recover. Wouldn't come back to consciousness. They're really worried. Everything in Yamalok, where everyone was in Kama all over the universe, everything was tied up, no one could go to Yamaraj for a judgment, the whole thing was completely... So Lord Shiva, he happened to come by, and said, what's happening here? He said, well, they explained what happened. He looked at Yamaraj. He immediately could understand. He said, Yamaraj is not fainted. He's in ecstasy. Thinking of the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he fell into trance. He's in trance. You have to chant Hare Krishna in his ear, then he'll come back. So everyone there, Jamalok, they all started to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Then Yamaraj came back. Then Lord Yamaraj and Lord Shiva, they started to do a kirtan, glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhu Nityananda, chanting. So many other demigods participated this way, not too much dissimilar from the song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Narada Muni Bhajaya Bhima. Like that, everyone was chanting in Yamaraj's planet. And this way, demigods, everyone, they're completely amazed by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, the Bhagavatam says that the demigods are crying to come down to this planet to taste the nectar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, to participate in this movement. And it's just a short time one can go back to the spiritual world. Actually, devotional service means to engage all the senses in the master of the senses' service. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanang. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanang Bhaktir Uchite. To serve Rishikesha, with the senses. So with the sense of taste, we take Krishna Prasadam. With the sense of sight, we see the beautiful deities of Panchatattva, Maha and Krishna. With the sense of hearing, we hear the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sense of touch the devotees, use our hands for printing books and sewing and cooking and other services. And with a sense of smell, incense, flowers, so many other aspects that will be discussed in the next verse. So, by engaging all the senses in Krishna's service, then one becomes purified. What is difficult? Who doesn't like to do all types of sensual activity? So in devotional service, one's not told to stop sensual activity. Simply adjust it so that the sensual activity is in contact with Krishnaized, transcendentalized objects. Transcendental sense objects. Krishna prasadam, food, flowers, Krishna deity, its holy name, the devotees. Touching the lotus feet of the spiritual master or touching the Vaishnavas. This is actually the perfection of these senses. Especially in age of Kali, people are really interested in sense gratification. So, through various cultural avenues, senses can be gratified, but in such a way that Krishna consciousness is expanded. Either like through drama, and through art, and through music, and through so many different cultural expressions, the senses can also be gratified, but in a Krishna conscious way. We can't live in the world without gratifying the senses. Even if we don't want to, sometime we'll suffer pain, sometime we'll suffer pleasure. But simply a question of choosing the types of pleasure which are Krishna conscious. This ends eventually the pain. Otherwise, sense pleasure only for material enjoyment in the end produces more suffering. Here also today we see that there are six tastes: astringent, sweet, bitter, pungent, sour, and salty, due to contact with other substances. Srila Prabhupada, he was always saying that in the West, they simply have two tastes: sweet and salty. Sometime now they're getting in a little bit, there's a little bit of sour, yogurt or something. But generally it's just sweet and salty. Salty preparation and a sweet preparation. Srila Prabhupada, he was in the, like, Eastern Indian cooking, Bengali, Orient, all Indian cooking to some extent, but especially they have at least five of the six tastes in every meal. Starting with bitter. Astringent is more rare, but the astringent taste they especially use in Manipuri cooking. Like aloes. They make a special preparation using a small bit of astringent substance. But to some extent, there are some vegetables that are a little bit astringent. Some Indian roots and things which are cooked even in Bengal. But Prabhupada wants the bitter so much, this actually helps the bile secretion, helps in various aspects, that he would have us harvest the bitter melon in Mayapur and dry it in the sun and send to him, wherever he was, by air freight. Now, the deities all over the world are being offered the different offerings because the Chinese and Vietnamese and other type of vegetables are available. But if you study in the Srimad, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it gives a range of preparations starting from different type of bitter preparations, pungent, hot, sour, of course salty, and finally sweet at the end. So all the varieties of taste can be offered to Krishna, including astringent, if you know the technique. So even in the modern, you say, even in the materialistic cooking, they don't have so many tastes. There are more tastes and more varieties of offerings made to Krishna than what people are normally used to. They have various varieties of unmentionable things, but there's nothing compared to the number of preparations that can be made or the different tastes that can be made. All Krishna prasadam. Thousands of preparations. In Mayapur for Vyas Puja of Srila Prabhupada, they offered 1,016 preparations. Big tables, 3 meters long by 3 to 4 meters long by 1 meter wide. They had at least 8 of those tables plus, in addition to that, another, like, so much. Each one different preparation. Not that, 15 kinds of halva, cherry halva. Each a different, completely different preparation. Even if you take this much, you can't cover all the preparation. You can't consume that much, even if you just take a pinch. I know, I tried. So many varieties are there to serve Krishna. In fact, Lord Chaitanya, when he was being offered prasadam by Dvaita Goswami, he looked and he saw the way it was set all in front of the deity, so many nice plates and offerings put out. Wasn't that he was attracted by, oh, look at the big feast is coming. But actually to see how nicely it was offered to Krishna, he became very satisfied in his heart that, oh, this is very devotional. What a nice process. You can cook a nice feast completely selflessly, simply for the satisfaction of Krishna. Actually, when devotee advances, they enjoy more cooking and offering the feast to Krishna than eating. And when taking the prasadam, more than the taste of the prasadam, the love of Krishna, the reciprocation that Krishna gives, it's in the prasadam, the nectar of Krishna's own touch, that is more, that is inconceivably satisfying to the devotee. Just like when Lord Chaitanya, he went suddenly into the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, offering him some prasadam, just when he was coming out of bed. So immediately he took the prasad and ate it. Lord Chaitanya didn't brush your teeth, he didn't do anything. He says, he quoted a slok from Sanskrit, once you take good prasad, you should take immediately. No rituals. Before he was a big stickler on all rituals. Now, he accepted the higher principle of prasadam. Another time, Lord Chaitanya, he got some cashews and different dry fruit prasad from Jagannath at Mangal Arati. When he came out, he gave to different devotees. Taste this cashew. Sri and Jagannath Puri, they have many cashew trees. So then, they all took a little piece of cashew. And Lord Chaitanya said that, so what do you think? They said, it's fantastic. What's a cashew? So many of we've all had cashews. What's in a cashew? It's just, it's a nut. Why is it that when this has been offered to Krishna, there's something about it, it's inconceivable. Completely satisfying. It's because the nectar of Krishna's mouth has gone into the food. It's very common, even when we cook a simple khichdi, offer it, some householder will come, Indian householder, they say, we'll cook this in our house, adding more nice ingredients, but it won't get this taste. What do you add to it? What is your secret? What is that ingredient that you're putting in this khichdi? That's Krishna's mystic opulence. Pashyame yogamaishwaram. See, behold my mystic opulence. When he takes the prasadam, the bhoga, it becomes prasad, it's completely transcendental. So actually within the Vaishnava tradition, there's a whole culture based simply on prasadam. What other spiritual processes there where people feast unlimitedly as a meditation? Cooking and offering and feasting, these are all forms of meditation. Forms of direct devotional service. Actually, I think many devotees were favorably encouraged to surrender to Krishna just because of the effect of prasadam. What would be our hope in Krishna consciousness if it wasn't for Krishna prasadam? How could we control the senses? Because of prasadam, sense control has become within the realm of feasibility. Because we cannot live without eating, and if we had to eat bhoga, just ordinary food, then how we would be able to remain transcendentally situated? Prasadam is definitely the mercy. That's why it's prasadam, it's the mercy of the Lord. So in the folk preaching, in the Navhat preaching, people should be encouraged not just to be vegetarian, but to be prasadtarians, Krishnatarians. This way they can taste the nectar of Krishna's lotus mouth in their food. Idli was nice. They have a program on the radio. Every night at 8 o'clock, they say, all the listeners, now remember as we told you before, preparing your food without any onions, garlic, meat, fish, egg, very nicely prepared. Now you put in front of the picture of Krishna, and someone will say the offering mantra for you. Offering. Then all over Italy, the people are putting their plates in front of their altar, and then with some echo chamber, effect, Someone is saying, Nama Om Vishnupada, and it goes over and they all get their prasanna offered and they take. That's really interesting. So, point is to introduce this process of prasadam. Today we're discussing the taste. In the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, there's so many references to big feasts. Krishnadas Kaviraj, he gave elaborate descriptions of feasts offered at different times, whether the feast for Haridas Thakur, or the feast at Advaita Goswami's house, or the feast in Jagannath Puri, or just so many different feasts were there. The feast of the Panihati festival coming up on June 10th, be observing in Atlanta on the weekend, the 13th and 14th, where to punish his devotee, Nityananda gave him the punishment, Danda Mahutsav, to Raghunath Das. Raghunath Das had tried to go to Lord Chaitanya many times, but Lord Chaitanya rejected him or told him, you just worship from your house. You're not ready yet to fully surrender. You can surrender where you're at, where you are. Like this. Actually, what was the secret? He didn't know, so finally he went to see Nityananda after about a year. And Nityananda was sitting there under the banyan tree with his associates. From a distance, Raghunath Das paid his obeisances. See, Raghunath Das's father and uncle, they were very wealthy landlords. They paid annual tax to the government of 1,200,000 gold coins, half the size of a Krogerant. They used to pay in gold mohur. Mohur means it was 11 grams. So you can calculate on a day's market what 1,200,000 coins of 22 karat gold worth of 11 grams each is worth. And you can understand how much tax they were paying, how much they were keeping for them, how much their income was. So Raghunath Das was their son. He was totally disinterested in the wealth. He wanted simply to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So he came, Nityananda said, so I'm going to, now here is that impudent Raghunath Das, trying to avoid the Guru. Raghunath Das's offense was he knew Nityananda was there, assigned to Bengal preaching. Instead of going to Nityananda, he was avoiding Nityananda and going directly to Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya was not accepting him. So Nityananda revealed his offense, how he was trying to jump over the Guru. It says that even if Krishna and the Guru are standing together, you should bow first to the Guru. And then 64 seva aparas to the deity. First one is to neglect to offer respect to the Guru in the temple. And the second is to respect any other Vaishnava in front of Krishna. Guru tattva and Vaishnava tattva are two different tattvas. Since Guru is the link with Krishna, even the deity room, before you worship Krishna, you have to worship Guru. Even in front of the deity, before Krishna, the Guru can be worshipped. But even if we don't worship Tulsi, although she's a greater Vaishnava, inconceivably greater liberated soul, if you try to compare what is the relative advancement of Guru as compared to Tulsi, you'll find no comparison. Tulsi is so advanced. But she's a Vaishnava. She's not acting as Guru for the devotees that are generally approaching her. Maybe she and someone could also possibly receive training from her at some higher level, but in the general sense, she's not. She's a Vaishnava, and worshipped as a Vaishnava. She's the greatest Vaishnava, Vaishnavi. But Guru is worshipped like that. So Nityananda is Adi Guru, he's the original Guru. And somehow Raghunath Das was avoiding the original Guru and trying to directly go to Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Nityananda jokingly was actually instructing him what your mistake was. So then Raghunath Das said, "Beg you, please forgive me for my offense." He said, "No, I'm going to punish you." "What is the punishment?" "You must provide a feast for all the devotees here. Flattened rice, yogurt, condensed milk, fruits, to their heart's content you provide. This is your punishment." So he accepted, alright. So everyone knows that festival, very ecstatic festival, how so many big pots of chira and doi were made. Actually, Prabhupada went on several occasions to Panihati, wanted to have a temple built there, said build it from BBT funds. If we get that original place and have a launch service, motor boats from Calcutta to Panihati to Mayapur. Yachts, river yachts, called launches. So, I remember that the first time on Prabhupada's order we went to Panihati to do the festival. We didn't know how many people, we didn't know anything. We filled up a truckload with devotees, we bought up several hundred kilos of yogurt. Then we also had Nitaigore deities, we had, you know, tons of flattened rice and tons of mangoes and fruit and bananas, just the whole trucks filled. We got there about 10 o'clock in the morning, but there were about 200,000 people there. You couldn't get within about 2 kilometers. It's just packed with people already. So it was all what we could do with tons of yogurt and fruit and everything. We couldn't get it at all to the Ganges side. It was packed to the complete. There's very narrow roads, and they're totally filled with people. And we made 108 clay pots of special chira and dahi, with each with, you know, mangoes and lychee nuts and jackfruit and sugar bananas and various types of preparation, and putting on top little white puris with white sugar, some cardamom water, aguru scent, sandesh, a little bit of chana, that means that natural curds with sugar and black pepper, and then various type of rasgulas and all sweets and things on the top, decorated fruits, 108 pots with a big cloth around it. Then we offer that to the Nityagora deity. Then we pacify the caste Brahmins. We gave each of them a clay pot. And the people were just waiting there. When is their prasad coming? Meanwhile, on the side, we paid big pots of chiradwai to distribute to about 50,000 people. Well, I remember that way we didn't have any experience, especially a lot of the foreign devotees who were there. One devotee thought, "Let me go out and give them prasadam." So he took the clay pot and went into the crowd to give them the prasadam. Lifting it up like this, he was giving. All of a sudden we saw him go in the crowd. The people just like piranha fish, they just jumped on him. And they all grabbing for the prasadam, and suddenly that devotee kind of disappeared in the crowd. Just boom. It's like lost in the ocean. They couldn't see him at all. About 10 minutes later, he crawled to somebody's legs, came back up on the platform. He said, "This is not the way to..." But he was very determined. I forget. It was, I think, a Northern European. So next time, he took another, and he jumped on a tree. And like Hanuman, he was giving the prasad, the people are going like this, you know, trying to get the prasad, and he was handing it down. So anyway, that was unprofessional, the whole thing. So then we started a whole line of people, and we built some quick bamboo gates so people could come in and line up. Just smashed it down in 1 second. So somehow or another, we distributed the prasadam, and people are so enthusiastic to get a little prasadam. You cannot conceive. Like all this festival, little prasad, simple, these are a little bit, little prasad. It's not like they're hungry, they're starving, they want to, actually they just want to respect a little prasad. They want a little bit of that mercy. They're eager to get the mercy of Nityananda. And they get a little bit, they're dancing and chanting. Everyone is bringing chiradwai there and giving it to someone else. It's a unique picnic, like no other picnic you've ever seen. and 200,000 people coming, all to picnic. What a festival Nityananda Prabhu has made. So, this way the Krishna conscious movement, the Krishna of Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, so many different festivals. So interesting and lively. So today when we read about how different senses are developing, the same senses can bind us in the material world, they can also liberate us. If we use them in Krishna's service, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanang, Bhakti, Uchite will be the... If we use the senses simply for trying to serve the senses and gratify them without connection with Krishna, we'll get more and more entangled. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? Yes, pardon? Any prasadam either? You got time? No time. Just that famous prasadam lila with Srila Prabhupada, that he was taking prasadam in front of everyone and he gave in his Vyasasan, some big feast, all the devotees are sitting in front. He gave that one rasgulla to one sweet ball, gulab jamun, to one devotee. The devotee put it on his plate, was sitting there kind of eating the other purpose, I'll take the sweet ball last. Prabhupada's sweet was thinking, I was so proud he got the sweet ball from Prabhupada. Suddenly the devotee next to him is ate the sweet ball. You took my sweet ball! And he's like completely furious, ready to punch him, you know. And the Prabhupada said, Mahaprasad, any way you can get it. So even you can take it from the plate of the spiritual master. Please do not do that, otherwise, you know, how will I eat? So, if we have the consciousness of this prasado, if we think, oh, it's a sweet ball, then me, that's another. But if we think, oh, this is prasadam, this is mahaprasadam, I need their mercy. Whatever that, whether it's a piece of bitter melon or a piece of sweet ball, but it's a mahaprasadam. That consciousness is there. Somehow or another we can get that mercy. Of course, anyway, the temple distributes, no need of, you know, raiding the... But, like that, we are devotees of Krishna in all his forms. Whether prasadam form, or whether lila form, or whether sound form. Bhagavan Shri Krishna ki! Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki! Srila Prabhupada ki! Mahaprasadi Govinde Nambramani Vaishnave Sapapunyang Matarani Vishwashanai Vajayate ki! Jai!